This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby. We were discussing, and I think it's a great topic to bring onto the airwaves, how technology, the new technologies of today, have dramatically affected what we see around us in the images, in the artwork that's presented in the art gallery, the images that we see on the screen of the television or in our print reading that we do, the art magazines or any magazines or the fashion magazines. There's a new look to everything, and a lot of it has to do with the new technologies. The art world is completely dominated by it. I mean, we've got easel painting is almost an anachronism. What we have is digital. Everything is digital, for one thing. Much of it is connected with a computer. There's a lot of video, a lot of installation, and a lot of images that are all produced via the computer. And it's all put together into these experiences that are someone in the 1800s had a certain idea of what art was and what paintings were and what artists did. And if they could see what we're doing today in the name of art, they would probably their jaws would drop. They're probably actually rolling in their graves right now as they look at it. So it's a new world, and it's the technology of today that has created this. So what have you got to say about that?
It's interesting to think about whether, in fact, they would be turning over in their graves.
Well, first of all, let me...
Or exploding with excitement about the new possibilities.
Let me go back. As I was saying that, I was realizing that turning over in your grave means that you can't stand what you're seeing in the future. But I actually wasn't meaning that when I said it. It was just sort of... Well, maybe half of it was that. Some people are probably not liking what they're seeing from heaven. Mm-hmm. And the other people are probably just saying, yeah.
Some of us from here on Earth aren't liking what we're seeing.
Right. Now, I think it's a mix. There's mixed reviews for what's going on. And I think that there's pluses and minuses with any new art. It's what the artists do with it.
Yeah. And it's that's something I've been dealing with for a long time, because I've been interested in photography and taking photographs all my life. And when I was a child, it was pretty well established that there were maybe three or four artists who used photography as their medium, but photography as a whole was not an art form. And that's changed, obviously, in the last half century, and we easily accept the idea that photography is an art form, and we're maybe having some difficulty with some much newer forms of expression. I've had interesting conversations with fellow artists who insist that anything done on a computer isn't art. And what I was thinking when you mentioned the old masters and how they might react to what's possible now or what's being done now. And there's a dimension to art where there's the art form is an expression of an intense acquisition of skill, a tremendous depth of skill, and in many cases a skill that's hard won, that you don't just practice for a few weeks and then you can do it. You might have to practice for a decade. And then there are other aspects of the art that have to do with simply being able to execute the concept that you have in your mind. So that you have a seed idea and you manifest it through your efforts. And if tools make it easier to manifest it, then, that's fine. There's no reason why you should use Stone Age tools if you've got computer age tools. And I'm sure, as the pigments were being improved in the Renaissance, there were people who thought that these bright colors were, a horrendous violation of the subtlety of something. When aniline dyes turned up around the turn of the 20th century, the you know, everything suddenly was brightly colored. All textiles were brightly colored, and that was a whole new world. But you know, we have a tendency to value craftsmanship, and we have a tendency to value works that embody a great deal of skill, just as we value works that embody a great deal of insight. And whether or not a tremendous amount of skill is involved in executing them, insight manifested or insight injected into a work of art is itself a kind of skill. And so I think in a sense, you know, we're looking for depth, and what's trying to the eye of our sensibility is triteness. It's when you see a magazine that's over-designed and is just full of garish, outlandish stuff that's just there to be visually, you know, disturbing, and in some cases is only marginally readable. I mean, Wired is a classic example where the design is sort of self-consciously overtaken the content to the point where sometimes you really have to have a strong desire to access the content in order to get past the design, to actually be able to read the white letters on the bright, bright red and orange background. So there's, you know, there are different aims involved, but the technology itself, it seems to me, it has rendered some forms of craftsmanship archaic, not obsolete, but certainly out of much interest. But it's also provided new possibilities. You have people designing buildings based on crumpled pieces of paper that couldn't possibly be converted into architectural structures without, you know, tremendous amount of computer engineering and CAD systems and things like that. And I think it's, I mean, one of the question that comes to mind when I see that is, okay, the first guy who crumples a piece of paper and turns it into a building, you know, he's going to get points for being clever and original, but in fact, it doesn't strike me as being clever and original at all. It strikes me as just being incredibly lucky that you could try something like that and have someone spend a few million dollars to realize it. And in the years to come, there aren't going to be too many more people bothering to crumple pieces of paper and make buildings out of it. But it is a new, you know, collection of possibilities that are coming out of the technology. In a way, it makes certain components of artistic expression into folk art. Just like the ability to make a music recording with GarageBand on a personal computer at the age of 11, you know, recording your friends with a couple of guitars and a keyboard and a set of drums or something, you're doing what they used to do with banjos and guitars sitting on the front porch in the rocking chair at the end of the day. And it's folk art, it's folk music. It's just, it doesn't strike us as folk music, and it probably in the Ozarks, it didn't strike them on the front porch as folk music either. It was what they did. But it's kind of a democratization of a lot of these things. You can make something that looks like that looks interesting, that's a picture of someone you like, and it looks sort of like a painting, and you've, you know, slapped it together. You took the picture without much thought as a photographer, and you ran it through some software without much thought as an artist, and produced something that printed out is still pretty interesting to look at. And that may get you interested in going deeper into those aesthetic domains, even though it isn't itself the equivalent of having done a painting of your friend. But it's an example of new possibilities for people that you can at least get started without much in the way of skill, and then hopefully get drawn in.
Well, and probably also we were talking earlier about people from, you know, the 1800s looking at art from today. They probably would be more fascinated and interested in art from our generation than they were in the the next one right after the first modern artists at the end of the 1800s, when they were starting to break boundaries, but it was close enough to the genre that they were used to that they could compare it. You know, it was just like a different kind of painting, and they complained about it and said, this isn't art. But I would guess if they saw something made with the technology of today, because they had no exposure to that technology, they would just be utterly astonished and fascinated.
It would be sci-fi for them.
Yeah. Like for us, sci-fi. Like if we were, I mean, what's going to happen 200 years from now in the world of art? I'm sure that we can't even conceive of what's going to be going on. And if someone were to give us a sneak peek, we'd probably be totally blown away and want to know, how could they possibly do such a thing?
Well, and of course, that's yet another dimension of it, is the wonder of it as opposed to the actual content of it.
Yeah.
Because the wonderment becomes.
That's how technology always wows.
Yeah.
At first, and that's why
distraction.
You'll have 10,000 photographers working with the new equipment. This was very common, and yet no one seemed to be able to turn it into art. Although with time, the artists get interested in the technology, and they're able to sort it out. Now, you mentioned the democratization of the whole process because of the technology we have. Mm-hmm. An amateur can come up with a product that has a professional packaging now. Before, there used to be someone in between, a middleman, who was a filtering, governing critic that would select before it could get to the packaging stage. Mm-hmm. So now it definitely is much more democratic in that everyone can get something packaged out there that looks like the real thing.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, I find, is that it puts much more responsibility on the audience to really ask themselves what is good art. And for the people that are making it to have to figure out themselves, because before they'd wait till they got a record contract, and that would tell them, I am a real artist.
Right.
And the packaged product made by the publishing company tells the audience, the viewer or the audience, that this is good, so you can buy it now. That's been taken away somewhat in this age, and it leaves a big question mark. It sort of puts very much a question mark for the participant of having to actually know what he knows about it based on who he is and what he knows.
Yeah.
It's a good thing, I think.
I think so, too. It produces, an awful lot of sort of horrible output. not sort of horrible. There's an awful lot of really horrible output out there. But at the same time, there are a lot of people having an opportunity to try to be creative or to act like they're being creative. And that means that they must be getting some positive feedback for going in that direction, either because they think it's cool to be an artist or their friends think it's cool to have done these pictures. Or they're trying to express themselves and they're beginning to find out how, and it happens to be through the first steps of an eventual artist. But there's also this new distribution medium of the electronics that means that not only can you make a record or produce a set of artworks, but you can also publish it with a trivial amount of effort. You can stick your photographs of your holiday at the beach online 10 minutes after you get home, and the entire world could, if they knew about it and cared about it, access your pictures of the beach. And they might find all of them to be slightly annoying, or they might find all of them to be quaint, or they might like one or two of them, who knows. But it means that, if you've got a guitar, it almost goes without saying that you ought to at least have one or two MP3s of your music on your website. And that's an astonishing pressure on people to actually produce things using their creative muscles. And that, I can't think of an analogy for that in the past. And I think that will probably have some kind of long-term effect on culture and the way things operate,
well,
our values.
It dates people like me. I mean, you are the same age as I am, but you're computer savvy. But I haven't put the amount of time and energy into it to keep up with what's going on. I don't have a website of my own. And, you know, I don't, my daughter just came to town and she knows 20 times more about how to use my computer than mm-hmm. I do. And it's just like a natural thing. And she didn't even grow up with it from an early age. Like the kids who are born now are learning how to use the computer when they're 3 years old. So that prejudices people like me, for example, when I look at magazines now, it's very clear that most of the pages in the magazine are designed on the computer, and they look very similar to the kind of designs you see on web pages, and that doesn't particularly appeal to me. So I notice as I'm leafing through the magazine that I'm looking forward to getting to those feature sections that are done in the more traditional way with, I mean, they probably still do those on the computer, but they somehow make them look like the pages that I'm used to seeing in a magazine.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely like those old people we talked about in the 1800s who go, wait a second, this isn't
well, there's
real
a,
art.
There's an irony there because all the pages are done on the computer,
right.
Unquestionably.
Yeah.
No one is doing paste up anymore.
Yeah.
And so the pages that don't look like they're done on the computer mm-hmm. are probably being done by someone with a different aesthetic.
Yeah, an older person, and, maybe.
Well, I wouldn't assume that.
Yeah.
I think that the thing that probably makes things look to you like they're done on the computer is the excessive use of things that are easy to do in Illustrator. Mm. Things that are easy to do with illustration software, which is different from photographic manipulation software. Because, you know, it's sort of like the electronic music side. I hear, you know, a tremendous amount of electronic music that's used in movies and TV shows and things, and it drives me up the wall because it's slapped together, most of it, in a very perfunctory manner by people who are just trying to get it out quick because they're getting paid by the product rather than by the hour. And the haste, which is another part of our culture, is producing crummy designs and hackneyed, you know, graphical effects that are just the easiest things to get at if you're using Adobe Illustrator. But it's not actually because anyone is doing it on the computer. In a sense, the aesthetics that's driving it is the aesthetic that's driving it is being in a hurry. It's mm. It's the quickie stuff. Yeah. You know, there was a time when you designed something with, you know, ship's curves and you know, rapidograph pens, and it took hours and hours and hours and hours of painstaking work over a period of days to do a design like you see on one of those pages. And now, you know, it takes a few minutes to slap it together. And I think the same applies in all of these areas where technology has made it easier. It's also made it faster. And we're very impatient nowadays. You know, the art director yeah. says, you've got to have 30 pages done by you know, next Friday. And 75 years ago, the art director would have been said, you have to have 5 pages done by next Friday. Someone was just telling me about, I forget it was from a book or a TV show or a documentary or something about the construction of the Brooklyn Bridge. And I think it was the author of this book about the Brooklyn Bridge had been hunting around in the New York City archives trying to find old documents about building the bridge. And he came upon this room in the sub-basement of some facility somewhere in the city that had been locked up since shortly after they finished building the bridge. And it was full of drawings and illustrations and plans and you know, technical drawings and things. And it looked like people had just sort of gone rummaging around to find a few things and then left, and everything was still out on tables and, you know, spread out on chairs and things. And the more he looked at it, the more obvious it became that these weren't copies of the plans. These were the original drawings. And these were done in the day before they had drafting machines. They were done with a T-square and a triangle and a dip it in the inkwell, ink pen. And they went, and built the Brooklyn Bridge from drawings that were done that way. And they're really astonishing. They're works of art in their own right. And in hindsight, they're irreplaceable. No one knows how to do that now. And to think that it was all done by hand without any fancy equipment. They didn't even have, parallelogram type or parallel arm drafting machines. Plus, of course, the historical value of the documents is substantial. But there was a time when you were building a bridge and you had time to design very carefully, thought out curlicues and filigrees of wrought iron that were not playing a structural role and that added hundreds and hundreds of hours to the design and probably thousands of hours to the construction of the bridge. And yet that was fine. The bridge was going to take years to build anyway. And, you had 50 or 150 people working on it for the whole time. So you got a different depth of expression in mundane things. Now the garish magazine page layout is a very mundane thing, and it's obsolete the day after it's published.
And right. Well, and you look at something like a Gothic cathedral, mm-hmm. No one would take on a project like that.
Yeah.
Today, the materials are too expensive, and no one would spend 100 years on one building.
Yeah. I think they're still building the Gothic Cathedral in New York.
That's right.
They're still carving the stone.
When was it started?
Now, what about the
years
National
ago?
Cathedral?
The National Cathedral, I think, is in the same boat. Mm. They're true Gothic cathedrals, and they're using stone cutting techniques
that's
original.
Great that they're actually trying to complete it. But
yeah. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. And of course, that's the trade-off. The technology makes it possible to do these things fast enough so that in the big hurry we're in, we can do them. Mm-hmm. If they took as long as they used to take, we just wouldn't do them. Mm. It would be out of the question.
It makes for a lot of just fairly air-brained, useless things being produced in a big way today.
I mean, I'm being sort of intentionally optimistic when I think that at least this entices people to be creative. And maybe because of doing some of these quick and dirty things that are easy to do and look kind of polished, they'll get intrigued by the creative process, and I think that's a good thing for anyone to get involved in.
Well, it's also fun when I see young people fiddling around on the computer or with loop machines or something like that. It makes me want to, just watching them do it makes me want to do that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make me want to take the time that it would take for me personally to actually learn how to do those things, because I don't pick it up as quickly as these young people would,
they're just like born with it in their mouth.
It's
their extension of their bodies now.
Well, they're immersed in it from the beginning. It's like language, and they're not trying to learn it anymore. They're trying to learn English.
Right.
And it's
we have to learn it like another language.
Yeah.
And I've only picked it up, I do conversational computer.
There was a show, concert recently at Cafe Paradiso with this musician named Caleb Hawley from New York, and we went to see him, and he had one of those looping machines where he could just, you know, bang on a frying pan and then record a little beat and then repeat that, and then while that was playing, he was like hitting a glass and then added that to it, and he would do like five or six of these sounds and then perform to that, and it was so cool because the thing, and then he even had the audience doing certain claps that he would put into the loops too, and it made me want to get one of those looping machines to play with.
I have one in the other room, and you can borrow it. Yeah.
Oh, we'll have to have a party to do that, because it just looked like such a fun thing to do, to just create these spontaneous layered sounds.
Well, the thing to do is invite Arthur Lee Land over when he's in town, because that's what he does. He's a nationally recognized performer of live looping. And he's also an extremely skillful guitar player. Mm. So he's
I've
not
heard
just
him
looping,
play
he's doing great
with
stuff.
Other people's groups. I've never been to one of his solo shows.
Oh, you've
so
got
to
go hear him do live looping.
Do that,
I've never heard anyone do it as well as he does. Mm. It's quite remarkable. And there's another great example of technology making something possible that isn't possible before, and in the hands of a real artist,
and
it's fabulous. Right.
And one thing is previously you might have had to have a whole orchestra or something, where you have to have all those people getting in the same place together, which is a beautiful thing, but now a single, alone artist can do a complete...
You not only an orchestra, you would have needed to know how to write music so that people could read it, because that's the way you would want to communicate it to the, you know, eight people who are playing with you.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.